Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And as a matter of fact, I have a new one for you. But before we dive into some new stuff, let me finish some obligatories. That debt is fraud. We don't owe that debt. And I hope everybody understands that when things have grown to a magnitude of fraud to what we're looking at, even though it just seems like, you know, this whole world is legitimate because we can't unravel any of it. And actually, we can. It's really not that hard. We have been convinced that it's complicated when it's really not. And I want to say it infuriates me, but that might be a little hyperbole, but what happens when we are misinformed? We are being manipulated. So I've actually started working on my next article on A. It's out of the series of articles that I've written, and they're available for you at no charge. But the next article that I'm writing really deals with resistance. And so I'll kind of get into this whole point of resistance, because what we have to understand is how divided we are. So I'm going to dive into that and some research about this, because if we can't talk about the elephant in the room, we really can't solve a problem. I mean, that's one of the things the framers had to do first. They had to put aside their differences and their self-interest to be able to work together with the reasonable information that they had, and they actually pounded out by the divine inspiration, they were capable of creating a government that has been under attack for 200 some years by its own people and government. So you can't tell me the strength that was placed into that thing, how difficult it is to topple when we've had the amount of attacks and deviations and so forth, especially over the last half century. I mean, we've been overrun. They've been using immigration for over 50 years, right? I mean, the immigration problem started flaring up in the 70s. Why? Because they wanted, and they created the scenario where Reagan felt his hands were tied and offered amnesty. And he violated the Constitution in doing so. So we have to start understanding, you know, who's playing with our politics, or actually who's in control. And that's the meat of what I'm trying to get to. Because bottom line, There's all these adages, and so I'm actually starting this next article off with this, I'll say, a pool of adages. You know, he who pays the piper calls the tune. That's one of the adages, because when we really look at, you know, the left and right and how we, you know, they seem to be diametrically opposed, but way back in the recesses of the darkest bowels of where all the controls are coming from, where these self-made monarchs of the world, well, they are actually creating very strange bedfellows, because most of these diametrically opposed organizations are working together. They just don't know it. And so this is a level of deception that reaches biblical proportion. But one of the things I also want to do is I need to talk to you and mention the importance of the power of prayer. So I would invite you to look into, you know, creating a prayer circle, or at least on your own, because Not that I am an advocate for large, you know, group gatherings of prayer. Find kindred spirits, friends, and so forth, where you can, in great humility, and don't marginalize the power of fasting as well, sacrifice. We can do this on a spiritual level. And I think that that spiritual level will actually help provide, I think, some outcomes that we wouldn't get, because we do know he loves us. At least those who are Christian and are listening to this show, you do know that he loves us and he wants to bless us. And when we act in faith and when we do those things, and the more we do those things, the more opportunities he can, we petition him in blessing us. We're calling upon him. And actually, this kind of goes into another thing that I'm putting into this. But let me just dive into this. Now, I was actually talking about making all elections local. We have to figure out how to do that. And so we had been covering that. But before we do, let me get into some more adages. And actually, it was bothering me, you know, where are we as a nation? And so one of the adages that I want to start off with is objects in the mirror are closer than they appear. In other words, when we think that the end or the second coming or some of these events are further away, they just seem like they're further away. And I think that may be because of our perspective of what we're expecting to see. Objects in the mirror are closer than they appear. And I believe that that is how we have been deceived in seeing things. But let me go a little bit further, and actually let me go way back. Our framers may have been good men. They may have been very religious and righteous men. And some may have been perceived as not so righteous. I can tell you that one of the ploys of deceit is to actually attack those men. And the progressives over the past century have been working and working and working to misinterpret, like Thomas Jefferson's letter to the Danbury Baptist about the wall of separation between church and state. Those types of things have just been thrown out to where people are actually questioning what, you know, the caliber or integrity or veracity of what these men did, what they said, and so forth. But I want to be clear here. None of these men were prophets of God, nor did they claim to have prophetic vision. They were inspired, and they were able to come together and did things, and they recognized his hand. That's one of the key things that we can all take away. They recognized his hand in the establishment of this nation, and more importantly, the establishment of the Constitution. We're a month away. I'm going to start, you know, advertising this. Folks, please, let's change our Thanksgiving from being a period of gluttony, of, you know, watching sports and just stuffing our face, and let's try to take a humble approach for this Thanksgiving. Go read the proclamation. I'm going to read it for you when we get there, but take the time now and go read George Washington's first proclamation of Thanksgiving. He calls upon this nation to serve him. That's what we're supposed to be doing. They set the standard of a Thanksgiving. The fact that we have an annual Thanksgiving as a nation and ignore what they did as the very first Thanksgiving, and actually we're we are recognizing what I would say, out of all of the different Thanksgivings, the least holy, the least righteous Thanksgiving out of what all the founders, or I should say our forefathers, had done. If you read the Virginia Thanksgiving, and I go through this every year. Why is it that we, you know, focus on, you know, the survival? I mean, it's a nice, warm, it's a feel-good story. but it actually takes away his hand in this nation, or I should say, his hand in liberty. Now, I have talked about the scale of liberty a lot, and I want you to understand that the scale of liberty really helps us understand how we work and how we function in this world. If you are truly a person of liberty, in other words, you are in full acceptance of the gospel of Christ, then it would be repugnant to you to think or create laws to regulate somebody in doing anything. That we have to have the freedom, or I should say the liberty, for people to become informed and to make their own decisions. Now, it's equally repugnant to take from people, to supply people money, or those things you take to basically enable their bad behavior. A good example, because we can just look at the example of abortion, and we can actually say, you know, it's one thing to say that we're against that and we shouldn't be supporting it. And more importantly, nobody should be taxed, or nobody should have to be compelled to fund an abortion, period. You have the problem. That is your problem. You want to do that, then you, I mean, we've gotten so bad in enabling bad behavior that we just give away free abortions. We actually give away free health care and so forth. There are consequences for our decisions. Because when we start moving away from that square of liberty and we start actually applying relief, or we take away the consequences of people's bad behavior, we've really slid down that scale of liberty down towards black, and, or I should say, towards the enslavement side, the black side. Every step we take as we start moving away from and trying to regulate or trying to control or what have you, because look at what's happened. It went from everybody should have a choice to where everybody now is paying for the cost of abortion. That is absolutely repugnant, immoral, and wrong. We should not be, a person should not be funding those types of things. And we actually have a system that doesn't allow it. Our government doesn't allow it. Our constitutions don't allow it unless the people have allowed that. And that's only happened in two states. But I digress. When I look at the framers and I look at their vision and how they chanted on how great, you know, this American nation was, and we like to recite them, I call caution. Because when we actually start citing somebody, we can easily find that there's contradictions. These men really didn't know. I mean, they made some really great sound bites, and John Adams was one of those. But I'll just show you John Adams and his myopic vision. So before I do that, the real question that we have to lay out here that I propose to you, is there hope? Or is there no hope for America? Do we have hope, or do we have no hope? Is it lost? If we look at the facts, if we look at where we are, if we look at these founders, or I should say these forefathers, and the things that they said, I believe the argument would be, based on everything that we've been told, we have no hope. But I believe that the divine hand of providence knew where we would be. He knew how bad it was going to get. And we're going to talk about how bad it is. I'm going to go through some of this stuff because I think these things are important. I think we can't allow ourselves to, you know, continually waste our time. The whole point of this diatribe is to get people to start getting committed. Because when you're committed, you're actually contributing. Until then, you're listening, you're talking. Yeah, there's this one part of Monty Python's The Meaning of Life where the Grim Reaper goes into this this dinner where they're having the salmon mousse, and the Grim Reaper is basically telling everybody, you know, that they've died. And then this American says, well, let me just say this. And the Grim Reaper pokes him in the eye with his bony finger, literally a bone finger, pokes him in the eye and says, you stupid or bloody Americans, you always want to say this and you got to say that. Shut up. And we waste a lot of time just talking about our feelings. We waste a lot of time diving into the research of conspiracies. We waste a lot of time watching the pornographic news cycle. We waste our time literally with all sorts of things that are drawing us away from what we need to do. And I can't be with you. The only entity that can be with you is the Spirit. And you have to call upon the Spirit to basically help you, you know, not be affected, not be drawn, not take the temptation of allowing yourself to be pulled into the news cycles or these, whatever these weaknesses are that keep you from doing what needs to get done. But let me dive into this, because when we listen, too many people have actually started reciting the pontifications from our forefathers as if they were prophets. And one such man was John Adams. Now, John Adams was known, and actually he's been cited by the progressives for a comment he made that America was not a Christian nation. How wrong was he? The federal government was not a nation in itself. It was more of a general government serving an amalgamation of nations. And when we actually look at the nations that amalgamation was, every single one of them, every single state had a state-sponsored church, and they were all Christian states. So when we look at the nation itself, was it a single faith nation of Christianity? No. So why did John Adams say that? Because John Adams, being a Puritan, he only considered a part of America being really a true Christian nation, and the others were heathens. So we have to start looking at why these men said the things that they did, and why is it that we actually look and go, oh, well, he must have known what he was talking about. That the Constitution was written for a moral and righteous nation. I guess he's speaking for God. I believe that the Constitution was written to serve the world. I believe that the Constitution was his plan for global governance. And I truly believe that only he knew where we would be going and how this Constitution could actually serve the world. Based on John Adams' vision, he doesn't, nor did he see it. He wasn't capable of it. And I think many of those men, they may have been brilliant men. I think that they were probably less brilliant and more divinely inspired than anything else. But when we look today at Christianity in America, right? And this goes back to, do we have hope or do we not have hope? When we look at Christianity in America, we actually have seen, we've witnessed, those of us who have lived in these days have witnessed a rapid decline in adults in Christianity in America. As a matter of fact, that rapid decline began in the late 1980s. Well, what happened? How did that happen? Oh, well, it was called the counterculture revolution. And they started literally getting away with teaching anti-Christian dogma in the schools. Do you think that what they were doing by doing that, as they ratcheted it up more and more, because it didn't just happen on 1967 that all of a sudden today's curriculum got injected. Every year it got emboldened a little bit more, a little bit more. It's like boiling the frog. And so when we kind of look at what happened, it took a while from the 50s and 60s and that counterculture revolution to finally get to a point where they were literally chanting from Pink Floyd, and I played this before, we don't need no education, we don't need no thought control. This was the drumming out of good morals in our school. And now we're all recognizing that what we had may have been good for enlightenment purposes, where we treated each other in more humane ways. Today we've become far less humane. We're far less tolerant of our differences. We've become even, and I'm going to talk about this, even those Christians, those, you know, love thy brother Christians, are more divided, and the visceral hate and the animosity is just, it amazes me that people call themselves Christians, yet they attack, you know, people who also call themselves Christians. Anyway, so as we kind of look at Christianity and the decline and what was causing all of this, the research based upon persons, adults, who identified as Christian and not active in any way, that number has been dropping dramatically as we've watched what's happened in our school system. All of these things are connected. You know, I've mentioned this before. Think upstream. Look upstream to where things have been happening and how it is having an effect downstream. Homelessness, you know, the loss of, you know, people having any drive at all other than being consumed by their addictions. Look at how debased we are. You know, I hear conservatives, you know, and as a matter of fact, I get fed these things, but you know, I was fed a little blurb by Charlie Kirk and how he talks about how Christianity in this righteous nation and all those things, you know, how we need to get back to that. I honestly believe that there is a more greater fundamental tenet of Christianity that actually falls into the laws of nature, nature's God, or natural law, that almost anybody, even though you may not be Christian, would believe that it is wrong to compel anybody to do something. It is wrong to take their money from them and actually use that in an absolute defiance of their morals and principles, because you know better. But we've created a state, we've created a system that was not to allow those things, and now it's happening. As a matter of fact, a good friend who I'm always in contact with sent me a book regarding the petitions. The history of petitions, it was kind of a scholarly book, but the view and the scholarly citations were all tainted because they did not dive into the structure of the Constitution. It only dove into the power of petitions. And so when we look at how research, when we look at research, you got to remember that anybody and everybody, because I'm playing with it right now, I'm playing with this research on Christianity in America, and I'm giving you some numbers here. And the bottom line is, we've reached a point where today, when we say how many adults are identifying as Christian, adults identifying as Christian, it's barely 60%. Does that mean if we have 60% of America that identifies as Christian, does that mean that they're good, righteous Christians? No. That just means that they're in that camp. That doesn't mean that they're going to church on a regular basis. There's a huge difference in a person, because anybody that that got into Christianity realizes how this all, you know, goes as you immerse yourself more and more, you become stronger. As you start basically, I'll say, walking away or not being involved and slowly migrating away from the practices and doing those things, then, you know, you're not really a Christian. Not that you're not Christian. It's just that you're not active. You're not seeing these things. You're not following the true word. Because we're supposed to be, you know, going to church. We're supposed to be, you know, involved in this, I'll just say, this social righteous worship with each other. That's one of the reasons why the right of worship is in the Bill of Rights. So we'll get into these numbers when we come back, but I want to expound on this regarding the forefathers. We'll be right back.
Listen to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so there's lots of little factors of how somebody could kind of gauge, you know, their strength in their commitment to Christianity. Attendance is one of those things. Daily scripture reading is another one of those things. And so they gather this data and they kind of create this analysis. And that's what you really see when you look at Gallup or Pew or what have you. You're looking more at the analysis from what they've garnered from these questions, and these questions are tailored to try to obtain, you know, certain outcomes. Now, when we look at this concept, remember I told you there's 60% of America, adults, around 60% today, based on the projections, everything else, what I was looking at, because I think the last study that actually had hard numbers where I could see it was in 2017. And at that point in time, it was just barely 60%. Now we can see that we've traversed, well, you know, about 7 years since then. And a lot of things have happened. COVID and the pandemic was one of them. And so we can, I don't even feel like I'm away from the trunk of the tree, out on some thin limb in making the statement that about 60%, probably less than that, of adults today identify themselves as Christians. And one of the reasons why this is happening is because old people are dying off, and we've actually had a lot of old people die off because of COVID. It was designed to kill older people and young people. And same thing with the vaccinations. So there's this bit, we've had this purging. So I believe that the numbers have dramatically changed. I've not seen any test that actually dives into this other than the 2017. So as are these surveys. So as I look at this and I go, okay, what is some of the new information out of 2022 and some Pew research that they've got? Now they're saying, because one of the things that they're providing in the analysis is the amount of people that are active that are Christian. Now, they're telling us that you got the 60% Americans identify as Christians. So the rest is non-Christian. Out of the 60%, they're saying 60% of them are not active at all in church in any way because of COVID. So let's just say that if you really played, you know, let's just round it down to 50% and 50% of 50%. That means 25% of America is active in, you know, it's a little bit better than that because 60 and 60, but 50 and 50, we're just giving you this perspective that it is well under half of America of where we actually have people that are active and engaged in their worship, in reading and attending and socializing and sharing the brethren spirit with each other, less than, well under 50%. Well under 50%. And yet we still have the Constitution. And based on those numbers and based on what John Adams stated, we have no hope. There can be no hope because we've gone beyond that threshold. We are not a righteous nation. We're no longer identifying as Christ as our Savior. The reality is that that Constitution was written on the foundations of liberty, that all people have this innate desire to have liberty. Liberty being, and this goes back to the scale of liberty, liberty being that all people, you know, want to be able to make, learn for themselves and make their own choices. Everybody looks and identifies in that one square. But the way they live and the way they view everybody else rapidly moves them out of that square of liberty and across the scale of liberty towards the dark side. Because, oh, well, I can't trust other people. I can't trust these faiths. I can't trust these faiths. And as you start moving out, you start realizing that you are not actually living in that pure mentality of Christ. It is repugnant to think that you can inflict upon others in any way. And it is repugnant to think that we remove the consequences. Now, the reality is this. Nobody is perfect, and nobody lives in that white square. No one. We all want to be there. That's where we all want to be. But when we make a mistake, it is another innate characteristic of man. Innate. You can't erase this, that we don't want to be held accountable. We don't want to face the consequences of bad decisions. And so we seek ways. It's a very rare person that actually wants to take all of their consequences. I mean, most people realize that, you know, making mistakes, going out there and, you know, playing chess and losing, you know, there are consequences of those decisions. You lost the game. And they realize that they get better and better as they, you know, as they continue to lose. And eventually they get to a point where they no longer lose. That's the whole point in life, is that we have to keep on getting back in there to improve and improve. But a part of that process, when we've done things that are wrong, because we've all sinned. Remember I said last week, everybody's a sinner and everybody's a saint to different degrees. Now, there are some people that have completely abandoned the righteousness. They've made those decisions to completely abandon, and those are the people that are really driving for the dark side. And we've got more and more, and I'm just telling you, by the numbers, we have more and more that are driving by the dark side. But again, every person that has committed to, let's say, the Satan, they're committed to doing his work. Every person that is committed there still has innate this desire, this inkling that we might be able to pull them away, because they do desire to have liberty, to be able to make their own choices. And so in other words, everybody has the opportunity to walk away, just like the Christians have the opportunity to just walk away and no longer live as a Christian. Those choices are always confronting us. The fact is this. When Adams made these comments, I am telling you that he did not understand the origins and the necessity of the Constitution, because the Constitution was a beacon of liberty to the world. Reagan actually realized this and actualized this, and I think that was one of his biggest moments as a leader, one of the most powerful statements he could make. Reagan was a good man who understood these concepts of liberty. He didn't understand the Constitution. He made mistakes. We haven't had a perfect president. But those who understand the Constitution more tend to be a better president, unless they happen to be the one that is actually trying to exploit and destroy, like Obama. Supposedly he was a constitutional scholar and professor. Supposedly he knew it, but he was looking at ways of destroying the Constitution instead of actually building this nation based on the Constitution and going back towards the Constitution. So anyway, after COVID, 60% of Christians, like I said, were not attending or anything else. The one thing that is certain out of all of the research on Christianity, that we have become more divided amongst the faiths. And it's a sad day, because that right there is, there's consequences, folks. Remember, I'm talking about consequences and liberty. You actually have the opportunity to be making the choice of whether you want to embrace or exclude people. And if you look at anybody of another faith, of Christian faith, whether they're Methodist, Catholic, whatever it is, don't judge the person because of that wrapping. One of the things I learned a long, long time ago is it doesn't matter what congregation that person is sitting in as a Christian. It doesn't matter at all, because not everybody, as a matter of fact, everybody that is in the attendance of that one parish, that one church, that one flock, everybody has their own views and their own interpretations of what they're seeing, what they're hearing, every single one. In other words, we all kind of have our own gospel or our own doctrine. And this is one of the ways, and this is how America actually started exploding at the seams with Christianity. How all these different churches started rising up because people were finding these ways of variations or things to focus on differently. Were they wrong? Well, I'm sure to anybody else, yeah. But in their minds, were they wrong? That's not for us to say. What is for us to say is that whether we accept and work with them and put aside our differences so that we can all support and maintain liberty, that is what's important. So one of the things that I got out of these studies is the fact, because I this was bothering me, because I'm going to get back into the article. The fact is, the reason that we are just crippled as a nation is because of our division, because we're not accepting, and actually, the reason we're seeing all of this happen in front of us, and I'm going to dive into this in just a sec, it is because of us. It is because we cannot unite. United we stand, divided we fall. As I look at America, we know that 60% of Americans are identifying as religious people. I am here to tell you that America is far more a moderate right nation, though there may be moderate Democrats or what have you. This is a moderate nation. Still to this day, we still lean to the right. What we saw in 2020 was the big steal, and everybody knows this, and the progressive media and the progressives in office, and as a matter of fact, they're so emboldened that they're actually, you know, pointing their finger. How dare you bring up the steal? I mean, they're in complete denial. It's almost like Baghdad Bob. Right? I mean, the facts are there. That election was stolen. And I was actually having this conversation with a good friend of mine where we were talking about the ballot, mail-in ballot election states. When Washington State became a mail-in ballot election state, that was in the early 2000s. It became the fourth out of four states. After that, Washington became a solid blue state. It was really more of a reddish purple state than it was anything else. But it became a solid blue state as soon as it brought in mail-in ballots. This is why there were no other states that actually started bringing in, and every state looked at the data and goes, we don't want to do that. So what ends up happening is they have this pandemic, and that becomes the rule of 2020. So in other words, folks, there was this big play, there was this big manipulation to prove that they could actually make them this moderate nation that would gravitate and lean towards. And I'm telling you, with Obama, there was a lot of voter fraud and election fraud, a lot of it. And because they had a lot of boots on the ground that were actually working and stealing that the 2008? 2008. and the 2012 elections. So what ended up happening in 2020 was the grand steal. I'm seeing today, I'm not trying to pontificate, I'm seeing today that because there's not going to be a pandemic, because there won't be this mandated everybody must vote via the mail-in ballot, that I see where the battleground states are going to actually, I believe they're going to end up going Trump. I believe that everybody sees, and I honestly see that that's the gravitation, we're going to go that way. Regardless, what I have to tell you, regardless of the outcome of this coming election, America is going to lose. And America will continue to lose because the outcomes that are happening are not for the good. It is for the manipulation and what the globalists want. They have the controls. That's going to happen the way they want to. I hate to say it. It's not that, you know, you're voting, you shouldn't have to vote. No, we do need to vote. But we need to be more committed and we need to be more active. The only way we break free of our government and take it back is we actually have to restore our Republican form of government. This is what we've been going through, and this is why we've been talking about how to make your elections, get all your elections local. Only way we can do this is through petitioning. The only way we're actually going to be successful is when we, the people, actually start stepping up. One of the things I'm diving into in this new article is how everybody all of a sudden attacked this flag called an appeal to heaven. And this appeal to heaven goes all the way back to John Locke. And so because I actually have his two treatises on government. And in that book is where he talks about this appeal to heaven. He talks about it a lot. And the whole point, the whole center of this, what is that all about, folks? That is about a petition. We need to make an appeal to heaven. When you read this, it is if we've petitioned or we've petitioned, we have to start petitioning. And we need to petition God to actually exercise, to give us our justice. But we also have to actually be petitioning so that everybody else understands the magnitude of unconstitutional government. You know, you don't want to fix a problem unless you recognize that it's actually a problem. Nobody recognizes that the Department of Transportation is actually a problem. Nobody recognizes that, you know, all of these different vestiges of power that the Environmental Protection Agency, I mean, the far right, they look at it that way. But there's way too many people that accept government and what they've assumed to do is legitimate, and it's not. We have to get everybody to start understanding what is legitimate and what isn't legitimate, and the process to do that, that Martin Luther used, was through petitions, and then he used the Bible to prove that his petitions were right. When we look at these petitions that we have, they are right. You can't refute these. We can make them stronger, and that's what we're doing. And we've been making them stronger. And actually, I've put up the new petitions. I'm going to be putting up another generation, or I should say, another improvement to them. But right now, all of the petitions are up. We even have the new petition up regarding land sovereignty, that the federal government does not have the authority to allow any nation to come in. As a matter of fact, they're kept from doing that. They cannot sell out any land or state resource whatsoever. And now they're actually blessing it and making it happen. And they're allowing states to do that. What that means is that the purchases of land and the purchases of resources of America, corporations, all of these things are all illegitimate purchases. It's all fraud. So all of the nations that are buying this land, all of the nations that are buying these companies, these assets and resources, that's all been fraudulently done. They don't have the authority to allow it. This petition proves this. So understanding what is legitimate, what isn't legitimate, gets us to realize how many elephants there are in the room. And or is it one big elephant, or are there lots of elephants? And I would probably I'd probably lean towards it's a herd of elephants, a very large herd. Elephants are not extinct. They've all been moved into this room. Or not, they're not even close to being endangered because there's that many in this room. What we don't see out there in the world, that's just because they've been all displaced into this room. The reality is this. We need to actually start working together. And so when we go through these founding documents, when we actually talk about where does the power really lie, Locke talked about the power really lying in the hands of the people. I mean, the whole point of why Locke and what he wrote in the two treatises of government was so mind-breaking, it actually destroyed the argument of monarchies that no person was to hold that level of power on this earth. Based on the fundamentals of Christianity, that we were not to be subjects to a person, supposedly, because they were anointed by God. That was his challenge in that book, that we are not to be subjects of a person that's supposedly been appointed by God. It's one thing to have a president or a democracy or a republican form of government, what have you, and having this different government structure. But the idea that we're being ruled by God's appointee is wrong. That is not biblically based. And one of the things that, you know, I start realizing is that everything that we received and we brought over from Europe, Britain specifically as a nation, I start recognizing and realizing that many of the things that we've embraced, such as the common law and the Bible being the basis of our common law and the supreme law, not in America. Those things shifted, those things changed. So when I talk about, and I want to dive into this, and unfortunately it doesn't look like I'll get into making all elections local, so we'll dive into that on Monday. As I was looking at how to kind of create this paradigm, or how to start off this new article, the paradigm that we need to look at is how we're being divided. Center stage is Christ on this stage, and in the back of the stage is Satan, who's doing everything he can to deceive us. Now, we're living in this world where we're living in faith, we're living on these concepts where we don't see, you know, his work, his hand in all things and so forth. There's kind of like this separation because we live in such a physical world. The fact is this, folks. When we look at the growth of what Satan has been doing, and I've told you that the Illuminati and all these conspiracies started a long, long time ago, we can look today, and I can tell you that when I see the left and how united they are, they put aside their differences because they recognize that they're all kind of kindred. The real problem is the right, because that's where the majority of people are. The majority of the people are on the right, and we're divided on what we are to do. So the question is, why is it that we're so divided? Why is it that we can't overcome and recognize we don't need a convention, a constitutional convention? Why is that even a legitimate argument? Well, because people buy into it because they don't go through a whole full model and say, oh, well, there's no amendment could actually take, get rid of government of assuming powers that they've already assumed. There's other than the 10th Amendment. I mean, we already have what we need in the Constitution. The Constitution is not the problem. The Constitutional Convention will not solve it. Ergo, why even have the conversation, or why even have effort in taking up time and sucking the air out of the room that we have to have a convention? because people have been convinced that that is the only process in the Constitution when they, you know, they just fail to read the Constitution, because actually the process in the Constitution of holding government accountable isn't a convention. It is the First Amendment petition. It's simple. So when we look at all of these different sides of, well, let's go over to nullification then. Oh, we can nullify. We'll just not follow the laws as a state. Single state nullification. That doesn't solve the problem either. I mean, anybody can see that when you just ignore the problem, that never solves the problem. Any psychiatrist, or I should say, what we call a C lawyer or a C psychiatrist, a person that has no certificates or anything else, but it's a simple, you know, these are simple theories, so we can just play like we're a lawyer or a psychiatrist. They all will tell you ignoring the problem will never solve the problem. We also know that the courts cannot solve the problem, and they've been one of the major contributors to the problem. The party can. So what I'm doing in this next article is really proving that we have to unite, we have to take a stand. Mr. Wilson, in the Pennsylvania ratification debates, he said this, that, but in returning to his reasoning, his position is, sir, that this country, the supreme, absolute, and uncontrollable power resides in the people at large. So in other words, if the people at large are divided, we cannot take our country back. So what we need to do, and he goes on and talks about how this power resides in the states and in the people, ultimately in the people. Well, when you really look at their paradigm then, they didn't realize they marginalized counties at that point. But every state, every territory, or every state that was going to come out of all of the territories of the United States all sprang forth from counties. And we still marginalize them, and that's the federal government just created them for us. They had no authority to actually establish a county. We, the people, have to establish our government, and we ignored our fundamental responsibilities of forming our government and creating a constitution for our county. If your government is going to wield any power and control you or regulate you, you better give them a constitution. You better have some mechanism of delegating the powers you want so that you can retain for yourself the powers you do not want to delegate to that government. We've learned this from the federal and state level. Now we need to do it to the county level. So we're starting to make these inroads. We're starting to help people get to the point of seeing the bigger picture. The real problem is we have so many people that are consumed in doing things and spending their effort either diving into the conspiracies or supporting a process that will not fix the problem. The final adage I have for you is this. If you're not a part of the solution, you are a part of the problem. And the only solution is interposition and taking action and seizing that evil that basically is taking us and keeping us from our liberties. We actually have to use interposition, that is petitions, and that is republic review. State interposition, county interposition, and people interposition, starting with the petitions by the people. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.